Today, we answer some of your common questions. Questions left by readers of my Property Update blog, listeners to this podcast, and clients of Metropole. And if they've got these questions on their mind, I hope at the end of today's show, some of the questions on your mind are going to be answered. Things like, how should your property investment strategy change given the current circumstances? Or, considering there isn't going to be as much capital growth moving forward, should you still focus on capital growth for your investments? How do you transition from the capital growth to the cash flow stage of your investment? We also talk about those 40-year spreadsheets and property strategy plans. Do they work? Or what's a more effective strategic property plan given the current environment? Now, a big question people ask is, how big a financial buffer do I need? And others want to know about diversification. Can you really do that? Is that the right thing? Lots of questions, and I hope you're going to get some great answers. So welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, where I have a chat with my business partner, Kate Forbes, National Director of Metropole, to help you get some clarity in these uncertain times.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's most trusted property commentator, who has once again been voted Australia's leading property investment advisor. That's the fifth time he's won a similar award in the last 7 years.
Following on from last week's podcast, when we answered many of your questions with my business partner, Brett Warren, today I'm going to have a chat with National Director of Metropole, Kate Forbes, one of my other business partners, to help answer the common questions that you're leaving on our websites on Property Update and that our clients are asking our property strategists. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks, Michael. Always a pleasure to join you.
Now, Kate, these questions are coming in thick and fast because people are a bit confused at the moment. The markets are changing, the economy's changing, finance world is changing in front of our eyes. So one of the common questions people are asking is, well, with all these circumstances changing, how has Metropole changed its strategic advice? How is it looking at property investment differently in the current environment?
You want the short answer or the long answer, Michael?
Let's have a short answer. Let's start with that.
It hasn't.
Okay, we can move on to the next question. No, maybe we should give some reasoning behind it, Kate.
Okay, we're talking about an asset class that's highly illiquid. It has high entry costs. It has potentially even higher exit costs. So you can't afford to chop and change. Your strategy needs to transcend market movements and ideally be a very, very long-run strategy that delivers that consistency of outperformance over the entire length of that property in your portfolio. So you can't be chopping and changing your strategy and your properties because we've had a wobble in the market or some economic turbulence. So our strategies are designed to transcend these conditions and other conditions and are there for the long run. So they haven't changed.
Well, I guess let's be clear. The reason we're not changing our strategy is because it's worked. It's known, proven and trusted. I've been using this strategy with lots of tweaks over the years as things have changed. So we tweak things occasionally. I've been using it and our clients have, and we've bought over $3.5 billion worth of property for clients and followed their journey and seen that it's worked well. But I'm sure some people are going to have to change their strategies in the current climate because it's not going to get them to where they want to get to. But we do know that if you have set long-term plans and you've got a goal of in 20, 30 years replacing your personal exertion income through residential real estate, you've got to choose the sort of properties that are going to outperform the averages. You've got to invest for capital growth, knowing that during the journey, there's going to be ups and downs. The market currently is moving backwards. There's no hiding that. But we've never suggested that the journey is a consistent one going up. You've got to be able to weather the ups and downs of the storm. But that's the way the property markets in Australia have been for 200 years, and I see no reason for them to be different. So how do we select the areas or the type of property that we are going to suggest for a client, Kate?
Well, it depends on a number of factors. The first is largely determined by your budget, and that's something that's to a certain extent dictated by the banks. We also look at location. So we're not prepared to compromise on the location because it's going to do 80% of the heavy lifting of your property or the property's performance. And then after that, you drill it down to the specific property within that area or segment.
So our long-term strategy hasn't changed. And in last week's podcast, when I discussed it with Brett Warren, I explained what that strategy is and what the end game is. So if you haven't listened to that, go back to last week's podcast where we explained that the end game is to build a substantial asset base so you have choices moving forward. And that would include your house with no debt. It would include owning a property portfolio with a lowish loan-to-value ratio so you can prove serviceability to the banks, and also some other assets, whether it's in your super fund or shares or managed funds, that's going to give you a level of cash flow. But with that strategy that hasn't changed for us, Kate, I know another common question people are asking is, well, why should I focus on capital growth now? Are the days of capital growth over, especially in the short term, at least, there being lower capital growth? Maybe I should just live off my rents. Why can't I do that?
It's pretty difficult to live off the rent, Michael. Perhaps the subject of another podcast or article at another time, but we've been doing some looking at recent data released by the tax office. It seems like there's a very small percentage of people who could possibly be living off the rent if you drill into the numbers there.
So the tax office department is showing that of the just over 2 million property investors in Australia, very few own six properties. And of those who own six properties, I saw you dug into the figures deeply, and it actually showed very few showed reasonable taxable income from their properties. So first of all, it's hard to build a portfolio without taking on significant leverage. So to get a big enough asset base to be able to live off your property portfolio, you're going to have to get capital growth, because at the end, most of what you're going to own when you retire or slow down your job, whatever you plan to do, isn't going to be the money you've saved, isn't going to be the rent that you've achieved along the way. It's really going to be the capital growth that happens in a tax-free environment. So the first level is to get a substantial asset base. And only then can you start to live off your rentals. But if you don't build that big asset base, Kate, and getting 3%, 3.5%, 4% gross once you've paid for outgoings and agents' commissions and land tax, it's actually pretty hard to live off the rents. You're going to really need to have a portfolio, I don't know, maybe worth $5, $6 million with no debt. Otherwise, you wouldn't have enough cash flow to have a good lifestyle, Kate.
Absolutely. And so if you accept that you're not going to be able to live off the rent and it's actually the capital growth that's going to get you there, then your job is to pursue the greatest capital growth that you can and to amass the largest possible asset base that you can before you plan to transition into trying to live off it.
Now, I know some people are going to listen to this and say, no, I'm going to live off the rent. So let me quickly run through some numbers. It's hard to run numbers in a podcast, but let's explain. If you want to live off your property portfolio, imagine you eventually own $1 million worth of property with no debt. Remember, you've also got to own your house. But let's say you've got a property portfolio of $1 million. You'd receive maybe 3%, maybe 3.5% yield, but let's make it 3% because it's easy to do in my head. You'd get $30,000 a year rent for $1 million. So $2 million portfolio, you'd actually, with no debt, you actually would get $60,000 rent, but then you've got to pay agents' commission and land tax and rates and things like that. So on that basis, oh, and then you've got to pay tax on that income. You really wouldn't, with $2 million, be able to have the right sort of lifestyle, $2 million worth of property with no debt and your house with no debt. Because if you're wanting to live purely off your rentals, you're going to have to get a big enough cash machine, which may mean $5, $6 million worth of property with no mortgage. Otherwise, your cash flow would be lower if you had a mortgage. And as I said, you've got to own your own home with no debt. And those are in today's dollar value. So in 20, 30 years' time or 10 years' time when you slow down, you're going to need even more. So let me ask you a question. Will you be able to save $4, $5, $6 million. Will you ever be able to build a property portfolio that size with a few dollars a week positive cash flow from your rental? That's why, in my mind, if you want to be financially independent through property, you first got to grow your substantial asset base and then transition. So we often say, Kate, that there are a number of different stages in the journey of a typical property investor.
There are indeed. First stage very much is you need to learn about it. You need to educate yourself, gather your team together, and make sure you don't make errors in the purchases of those properties. As I said earlier, your entry and exit costs are substantial, so you really can't afford to make mistakes at the first step.
So after the educational stage of your wealth creation journey, you then need to go through the asset growth stage, and that requires leverage. You've got to borrow, and then you've got to transition your loan-to-value ratios because, as we said, you've got to get to the point where your borrowings aren't as high, so you're starting to get some cash flow. Now, cash flow is important. I don't think we should underplay the importance of cash flow. Cash flow management will keep you in the game, but it's actually capital growth that will get you out of the rat race, because eventually we want you to live off the cash machine of your property portfolio. So capital growth should be your main focus. But Kate, a lot of people are then going to ask, well, how do I end up repaying my loans? Because I've got to, as you say, get a lower loan to value ratio. And during the growth stage, you're wanting to maximize your loan to value ratio. So you're getting that maximum of leverage, which is basically starting with an 80% loan to value ratio.
I guess there's a number of ways that you can lower the loan-to-value ratio, Michael. The first is not to grow your portfolio as aggressively as you would have in the beginning. And these days, that's a little more difficult than it certainly was, say, 5 years ago. 5 years ago, all you needed was the equity growth, and you could continue to extract that equity and grow your portfolio. But now we need serviceability to grow in line with that equity growth. So necessarily, I think most people are growing their portfolios at a far slower pace these days than we were seeing five years ago, or perhaps earlier than that.
Now, Kate, before we get to the next point, I think this is interesting because right at the beginning, we said we haven't changed our strategy because of the current circumstances. But we definitely have tweaked our strategy over the last decade related to the world of finance, because that has changed very much, hasn't it? So rather than the living off equity strategy, we've discussed the strategy that I talked about in the last week's podcast. And if you haven't listened to it, let me say once again, go to whichever app you're listening to this on and go back to that, because we actually have to have a more balanced portfolio at the end to prove serviceability and to live off. You can't just live off the equity. So at times we do have to, we're not stuck in our ways. We've got to go with the flow. But to get to where we want to get to, that strategy hasn't changed, Kate.
Certainly what we buy hasn't changed, but perhaps the timing of when we buy it and maybe even the ownership structures that we use for those purchases, that's changed. I guess the rules of the game have changed, and we've had to flex a little with that as well. But the underlying principles haven't changed and shouldn't.
So I interrupted you, as I tend to do. Kate, you have worked with me for a long, long time now, so you're used to that. So you explained to me how we transition to the cash flow stage of your investing from the growth stage. And the first one you said is you grow your portfolio a little bit slower, allowing capital growth to occur and the loan to value ratios to naturally slow down. What other techniques could you use?
Well, you could pay principal and interest. And these days, that's something that's being forced anyway by the banks for a number of positions. Even if it's not your entire portfolio, the banks are certainly asking for a lot more principal and interest than the free days long ago where everything was interest only. So necessarily you're paying down part of that debt.
And interestingly, in the current environment, you're doing that at much lower interest rates than interest only loans. So sometimes, even though you are paying down a level of debt, your cash flow position may not be that much different. Okay, Kate, so there are two ways. What other ways can we, over the second stage of your investment journey, so you've actually, during this journey, that's why it takes years, and you're not going to become wealthy overnight through property. You build your asset base, and then there's that extra period of quite a long time, and it can really be up to a decade, Kate, that you transition. It's not an overnight process, is it?
Certainly isn't an overnight process. And selling, whilst we have never liked that, and it certainly isn't first prize, it may be that you need to sell a property or two and use the proceeds of that sale to either pay down some debt or perhaps to live off the realized capital gains that then buys the rest of the portfolio the time that it needs to deliver and perform for you.
Sure. I know another strategy that we use when people get to having a substantial portfolio is to get a blend of properties, not just capital growth related properties, but also cash flow properties such as commercial properties. So rather than secondary location residential properties that give more cash flow, that also gives a level of diversification into different sectors. Now, currently, retail's not doing very well as a form of commercial property, but warehouses are still doing okay. In fact, industrial and warehouses are probably going to do very nicely in the post-COVID environment, and it forms a reasonable part of my property portfolio. Now, we're not allowed to give superannuation advice, but some financial planners do suggest when you get to the official retirement age, your advisor may actually suggest you sell some assets from your self-managed super fund, give them to you in a non-tax environment, and that could help you pay down some debt. And I know also some of our clients redevelop a property, refurbish a property to increase its rental potential. So there's a number of different ways of transitioning, but it's a process and it's a plan. And I know it's part of the plan that you and your team put together for our clients at Metropole as part of the strategic plan of planning to become that sort of person they plan to become and having the enjoyment of their property portfolio in their golden years. Now, having said that, we do plans, but I also know that one of the questions our property strategists sometimes asked is, I know some companies put together 40-year spreadsheets as part of their plans. I know our team has sometimes asked, well, why doesn't Metropole put together a 40-year spreadsheet? I'd really like to know exactly what's going to happen over the future.
I guess the answer is that we can. We just perhaps don't, I guess, believe it's worth the paper that it's written on when you're looking at it out for that long, because there are so many variables in there that can change. And the slightest change in one of the variables actually has a massive implication 40 years down the line by the time it's extrapolated out. So we don't want a false sense of confidence that a 40-year projection might give to our clients. What we prefer to do is to project and to plan for the short to medium term, but to revisit that on an annual, if not more regular basis to factor in all of those changes. It might be a little bit of a change in personal circumstances for the client. It might be a change in market conditions. It might be and anybody who's actually worked with models will attest to the fact that you change one little number in there and extrapolate it out longer enough, and it really does have huge implications. So with inflation where it is right now, if you put in a figure that is very different to what plays out over the long run, it's going to have a huge impact on the numbers that your report is spitting out. So we can do those 40-year projections, but what we prefer to do is project for the short to medium term and to revisit that on a regular basis.
Well, as you said, there's a myriad of factors that will affect your wealth journey, some in your control and some out of your control. Just look at where we are this year and any of the plans that we made for the last 12 months, a year ago for our clients. Who would have dreamt that we'd be in the situation we are today? We've learned all too well that every year there's an X factor and so many influences. But the other interesting thing, Kate, is they've got different weightings. So some are more important than others as well. So as you say, rather than giving a false sense of security, having very detailed long-term spreadsheets, we break down the goals to short-term timeframes, and then regularly review them. I'm sure you've heard that flying a plane between Melbourne and, I don't know, Los Angeles doesn't fly a direct route. It zigzags. It goes backwards, it goes forwards, it's being blown by the winds and by the weather, but it ends up in the right spot because it regularly corrects its flight path. And in many ways, it's much the same with your wealth journey. So you need to understand where you are now. You need to understand your end destination. You also need to understand what your time frame is, and then you build your flight plan to get there and you correct your flight path along the way. So I'd agree with that, Kate. Another interesting question is, part of our strategy is to have a financial buffer. Now, that has helped a lot of our clients get through these more challenging times where some haven't had as much personal exertion income, some have lost rent for a while, some are having difficulty getting tenants as the market's changing. And a year or two ago, when your team put together a strategic plan and said to our clients, yeah, look, I know you can borrow $1 million, but we really don't want you to use up that last bit. We want you to have a financial buffer. That was a form of insurance, and boy, has it come home to pay at the moment. But the question then would be, how much of a financial buffer do I need? That's a common question people are asking.
Michael, it's an incredibly common question. It's one that actually you need to seek licensed advice on, that exact dollar figure that you should be aiming at, because it constitutes financial advice. However, if we talk about sort of general principles, if you have a look at what you're actually trying to achieve, you're trying to buy that portfolio, the buffer that it needs, the time that it needs to perform and to get you through whatever rocky weather you might be going through at that time, whether it's personal or economic related. If you have a look at what your portfolio costs you on an annual basis, you'd at least want a couple of years of that negative cash flow in there, bearing in mind that that would need to be a pre-tax negative cash flow. But it's no use saying, well, my portfolio costs me $10,000 a year, therefore I need $20,000 a year as a buffer, if you're going to be relying on that $20,000 to live off as well. So say you couldn't work, or say you lost your job, as many people are in that situation right now. You need to fund your portfolio, and you need to keep a roof over your head and to feed your children. And you can't have a number of competing claims on that same $20,000 that's the buffer that you had in the account there. Of course, you can reduce the buffer that you have or that you need to keep by insurances that you might have in place, such as TPD or critical illness. But this insurance won't pay out for every circumstance, so it would be prudent to at least have a reasonable period of your living expenses in there, as well as the negative cash flow costs of your portfolio in there. But do seek licensed advice in terms of being able to figure out exactly what is prudent for your own circumstances.
Two disclaimers and the one answer. I love that, Kate. But the answer is that we're suggesting that cash flow management is important. So while we spoke a lot about capital growth, to get you to the end game, you actually have to have the cash flow management to get there. And part of that is understanding your budget, and part of it is having an emergency buffer to see you through. And often this sits in an offset account linked to your loan, so that you actually maintain a cash buffer there, but it's got the benefit of reducing the interest that you're paying as well. And that could be used to cover maybe the cash flow shortage, the negative gearing. It could be for unexpected costs or holding costs. How much you need? Well, it really is going to depend a bit upon what your current cash flow surplus is. In other words, are you able to save? When you first start off, you really can't have much of a buffer. Beginning investors really need, in general, to use up all their savings for the deposit and the purchase costs, and then they've got to have the continuing saving discipline to put some money aside. So the question is, can you cover the current cash flow shortage of your property? Are you able to fund that shortfall if tenancies move out, if they become vacant for a while? You've also got to be able to cover unexpected repairs or maintenance. What if interest rates rise? Now, they're not going to for quite a few years. Or how secure your job is. That's going to come into account when you work out how much buffer you need as well, because some people are able to do an extra shift or see more customers or clients or patients, while others on PAYG are not in the position to do that. So you need to get financial advice on this. You also need to have the financial discipline not to use your buffer for personal expenses. You already hinted at that, Kate. So that's not your money to use.
Just one more thing to add on that, Michael. Whilst it's really important that you have a prudent buffer in place to protect yourself against that bad weather, it's also important that you don't have too large a buffer. And there might be a number of people out there who say, well, how can I have too large a buffer? But it's important also to recognize that whilst those funds might be sitting in your offset account and effectively earning a return in there, it's perhaps not as good a return as you could get were those funds invested elsewhere. So there's an opportunity cost in having too large a buffer, whether that's in growing your portfolio or whether that's in adding value to the properties that you do have in your portfolio or perhaps a different asset class entirely. You need to make sure that every last dollar of your asset base and your investment capacity is working as hard as it possibly can. So don't push that buffer beyond what is actually necessary for you to hold.
Now, the other thing you shouldn't do with your buffer is use it for lifestyle expenses, for a holiday, for a new caravan, for having fun. You've got to have the financial discipline to have it sitting there and recognizing it's not your money to use. That's a business that you're running, a property investment business, and that's there to ensure that your business sees this through the ups and downs of the cycle. Now, Kate, we've covered quite a number of questions. There are so many more. We're going to have to do a couple more shows on this. But there's one last one I'd like to discuss with you, and that's the concept of diversification, because a lot of people believe the concept. They've read the common wisdom that suggests you should diversify your investments. And then they wonder, well, how do I diversify when I buy residential real estate? Because common wisdom that you read says diversification is important. Now, in my opinion, that's wrong. In fact, I remember reading Napoleon Hill's great book, Think and Grow Rich, where he said successful people specialize. They get something that they're good in, and then they don't diversify. On the other hand, I know you're going to find many financial planners that tell you you should diversify to protect yourself. What they fail to tell you is it's also for their protection, since most financial planners can't tell you exactly which share, which managed fund's a great investment. They tell you to buy a bunch of them. I remember Warren Buffett, one of the world's great investors, said, diversification is a protection against ignorance. It makes very little sense for those who know what they're doing. But as a property investor, I think there still are ways of diversifying, and we can talk about those. But if you do it in the normal way people are thinking about it, leads to averageness, bottom of the best and cream of the bottom. I found most wealthy people, most successful people, be they business people, entrepreneurs or investors, as I said a moment ago, they've got something in common. They specialize. They find something they're good at and they do it over and over again. And that's how you become good at it, rather than trying different things. I'm going to buy cash flow property this time. I'm going to flip next time. I'm going to do something else in another area. But if you do the same thing over and over again, you will become good at it. I remember one astute colleague of mine telling me, if I try to do five things to earn money, I lose money in all five things, so I focus on only one really good thing. So I think most property investors, first of all, concentrate, and then they reinvest, and then they start to look at other areas. But there are ways of diversifying, Kate, to mitigate, to minimize your risks. So maybe we could go through those.
Michael, through the years, and certainly on these podcasts and everything that we've said to date, we've waxed lyrical on pursuing capital growth as the first and sort of primary goal, with the aim of growing the largest possible asset base that you can. But at the end of the day, it's return that you're looking at, and the best overall return. There are obviously a number of schools of thought on diversification, and we've had many clients and I've known many people who haven't diversified at all and have done incredibly well out of it. And by and large, we like to follow capital growth. as the most important factor. So if you're choosing and accepting that it's capital growth that you're chasing, we know that it's Melbourne that's delivered that consistently, the highest capital growth over the last 4 decades. So a number of questions I guess we ask is that given that Metropole is always talking about Melbourne's performance, why might we be recommending a different destination for a particular client? And diversification is a part of it, but perhaps it's more of a byproduct of chasing the best total return in there. And that's because of, in particular, your leakage areas and all of the areas that you pay out for property that can reduce your return. Land tax is increasingly something that is proving to be a huge leakage area. So if a client has a significant existing portfolio in one ownership structure in a particular state, it may be that moving to another state actually, even with a marginally lower capital growth projection in there, actually results in a higher overall return for them. The side benefit of that is a bit of a diversification in there, but it's not the primary reason that we would have chosen to put a client into another state. So it's diversification for the purposes of reducing costs in there.
Well, I guess there's other ways you can diversify as well. So you can protect yourself by diversifying lenders. Just as the bank worry about concentration risk if they've lent you too much money, if you own too many properties, doesn't make sense to have lender loyalty, especially in today's environment. So you can spread your risk by using a number of banks. You can diversify different loan terms, different loan types, protect yourself from interest rate fluctuations by having some loans fixed, some loans variable. Now, in the short term, that may not be as important, but interest rates are going to rise again one day. And I'm looking forward to it when it does, Kate, because when interest rates do rise, it'll only be because the economy's done really well, because inflation will be up again, because the value of your and my properties have gone up. And so it'll be a result of the Reserve Bank trying to slow us down again. Boy, wouldn't that be nice? But I don't think that'll be there for a little while yet. But even if you've got one loan, you can split it into partly fixed and partly variable. So you can diversify your lenders, the type of loans, your investments across different states. Because if you can't afford to buy in Melbourne or Sydney, for example, if your budget doesn't allow you to, as you say, we'll often suggest our clients invest in Brisbane. And we know there isn't one Brisbane property market. So while Brisbane overall hasn't done as well as Melbourne has or Sydney has, there are certain suburbs that have done much better than maybe this only sort of suburb you could afford to buy in Melbourne or Sydney because your budget doesn't allow it. Similarly, as you said a moment ago, Brisbane's got better rental yields, and so an overall portfolio growth of being able to support the property because of extra rental yields, that's another way it works well. Also, tenant types and property types. So I'm in the fortunate position. I own residential, commercial, industrial, apartments, townhouses, blocks of apartments. And currently, when because of coronavirus, certain segments of my portfolio are not working as well, there are others that are holding their own very nicely and helping my property investment business. So I agree with you, Kate, that most of our very successful clients actually haven't done a lot of diversification at all. They've found something they're good at. They've stuck to it. They've done it over and over again. Why would I diversify and invest my in the next hotspot or regional areas? We don't want to fight the big trends. We just stick to the big trends because despite the ups and downs, that's what's going to carry us over the long term, isn't it, Kate?
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better.
Well, we've actually covered a lot today, Kate. We've answered a whole lot of questions, but there's a whole lot on my list here that we haven't even got to. So if it's okay, we'll get you back again real soon to go through the others. But if you've enjoyed my chat with Kate or last week with Brett Warren, why not have our team at Metropole on your side during these challenging times? You can ask them these questions yourself, but more importantly, you can get them to help you plan your future. And even if under the current circumstances, you're not ready to buy a property, you're not certain what's going to happen to our economy, it's a great time to plan, to get all your ducks in a row for when you think you're ready. Now, having said that, there's some people listening to this who are going to have secure jobs, who are going to have good income, and now may be the right time. There's others of you who may think, hey, maybe my portfolio is not working as well as it should. And that's part of the strategic property plan also, seeing if what you've currently got is going to get you to where you want to get to. So go to metropole.com.au, leave your details, have a chat with Kate or her team, and we'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. There'll be a link in the show notes, metropole.com.au. Thanks for your time, Kate. And we're doing the right thing. We're socially distancing. I'm not exactly sure when the show's coming out, but we're currently in lockdown stage two while we're recording, or stage four, I should say, while we're recording this. But that's the wonders of modern technology. And despite lockdowns, we are still seeing clients. Interestingly, when we spoke about it just before we started, we're actually busier than we've been for a long time. While there's a lot of people not able to do anything in the market, there's a lot of others seeing it's a great time to get set and get ready.
Certainly more inquiries than heading into the elections last year. So there's a lot of people doing the right things and making sure that all of their ducks are lined up so that when the opportunities do present themselves, that they can take advantage of them.
Thank you. Great. Well, we'll be back again with the rest of this question and answer session real soon.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
The mindset message I'd like to share with you today is that the moment is not permanent. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, why do babies love playing peekaboo? Well, apart from the obvious fun, especially for adults, and I know that as a grandfather, it's because up till about the age of 5 months, babies haven't yet developed what they call object permanence. Object permanence is our knowledge that objects continue to exist even when they can't be seen, heard, touched, smelled, or sensed. That's what psychologists tell us. Now, while this is a vital survival mechanism, it also means that as adults, we've got a tendency to think that it'll take us longer than expected to recover from an unpleasant event. These events have got power over us because we continue to relive them in our memories, trying to make sense of the trauma, trying to make sense of the confusion. It's this tendency to think that things are permanent that causes us to get stuck. Today blends into tomorrow, and whether you felt that your day was good or bad, it's unimportant because your thoughts are limited by the possibilities that arise from that one thing, the thing that went wrong. But things can change in an instant. What's happening now won't go on forever. A chapter in your life is not the whole story. When you let go of the anxiety about your future and the depression about your past, you'll feel the only thing that's available to you is the present moment, and what you make of it. So don't treat a bad day like it's been a bad year, because this day, this date, the date you're listening to this message, will never come again. Each breath you take is a precious gift that somebody else is fighting for. There are people on this planet who would love to be in your position, in your location, have the life that you've got. So rather than remember those bad memories, think about what you're grateful for, what you're grateful for right now, because you'll never become wealthy unless you have an attitude of gratitude. Thanks for listening to today's show. I hope you got some answers to some of the questions you may have been thinking about in my chat with Kate Forbes. And remember, we discussed some other big questions in last week's podcast as well. By the way, if you're a new listener to this podcast, and I know we're getting new listeners all the time, I see it in the download statistics, there's 3 years of podcast shows that you could download and listen. Hey, you can listen at 1.5 times speed. I still sound good. In fact, that's the way I listen to podcasts. And you can catch up on a lot of expert advice on property investment, success and money. And if you got some benefit from today's show, why not tell somebody else who you think could benefit from these answers as well? Share it through the share button on your podcast app, or tell somebody about the Michael Yardney podcast. If you want to tell the world about the Michael Yardney podcast and leave a review on whichever app you listen to this, I'd really appreciate it as well. And if you do, and I read it out, I'd love to say thank you by gifting you one of my books, as I'm going to do now for Justini, who left a really short review, but that was okay. It was a 5-star review, so thank you, Justini, who left it via Apple Podcasts, saying, great, left a 5-star review. Thank you, Michael, amazing podcast. Short and sweet, but that's all I need. Justini, if you email me, michael@metropole.com.au, I'd love to say thank you personally to you. I'll be back real soon, twice a week, with the Michael Yardney podcast, but in between you can catch up on any of the social media. Just look out for Michael Yardney or daily in my property update newsletter. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?